8 o'clock Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship station of the 2018 Western Conference champion Vegas Golden Knights. We are streaming on the LV Sports Network. And if you're listening for the first time, this is Out of Line, and we are here every Sunday morning at 8, coming your way from the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. Happy early new year, and I'm Brian Feldman, and I'm here with producer, Lotus Broadcasting sports personality, and Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room correspondent, Chris Magnum Chapman. You can follow us on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM, and like the show on Facebook. That's Out of Line, OUTTALINE. If you want to watch the show, you actually can. We are on Facebook Live. Check out our Facebook pages, and we try to keep the show interactive, so your opinions are welcome and do matter. Call the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line, 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What is on tap is pouring out thanks to Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. On tap, you got college football playoffs. You saw those yesterday. Yardbarker's Emily Van Buskirk, who was at the Cotton Bowl and will be at the national championship game, will be joining us in just a minute here. The Vegas Golden Knights have won two in a row, I believe, points in their last five games. And joining us from L.A. for Nightcap is senior editor of Gaming Today, columnist at Sin Bin Vegas, and author of Vegas Born. Steve Karp will be joining. And also, the Running Rebels have been off since a ugly Christmas Day loss in Hawaii. It was bad. That was coming off, you know, they had two wins, and then they go to Hawaii, and they won the game in Hawaii, the first one, and then they lose to Indiana State and Bucknell. And, I mean, it's bad. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Magnum was singing their praises and saying he should get another year last week after the two wins against BYU and Hawaii. I said something different. We'll open up that discussion again. And it's the final week in the NFL's regular season, all kinds of playoff implications. I love this time of year, and we'll talk playoffs and our picks of the week. Magnum's red hot. You probably want to listen to the guy. Took over first place last week, and I think two or three weeks in a row now. So definitely check that out. And listen, What's on Tap does come your way thanks to our title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. And
Tungavaloa, clean pocket, puts it in the flat. There goes Jacobs. Hedestine lowers the shoulder and scores. It is personal. It's emphatic. And it's incredibly lopsided.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. Alabama never for a minute was in doubt against number 4 Oklahoma. And in a blowout in Miami, number 2 Clemson dominated in Dallas and beat number 3 Notre Dame in every facet of the game. This was expected and obvious, and all who couldn't see this, I hope now, in retrospect, see that they should have. And I believe it is also obvious to see that Alabama is going to beat Clemson. But Dabo Sweeney will find a way to cover the spread. That always happens. And hopefully, I'm hoping it's going to be a closer game. It'll be decent. Emily Van Buskirk, Yardbarker.com, lead college football and basketball writer, joins us now. Em was at the Cotton Bowl yesterday, is going to be at the Fiesta Bowl tomorrow or on a Tuesday, and then a week from Monday up in Northern California, your neck of the woods, you're going to see what we're hoping is going to be a decent national championship game.
Yes, it is the busiest time of my entire life, and I couldn't be more happy to be calling you from an airport after witnessing, you know, not the best Cotton Bowl I've ever seen in my life, but it was an incredible experience, and we got to see a lot of what Clemson is made of. And I spent a lot of time around Dabo this week, and I got to tell you, he sold me. I'm a fan. I am now team Dabo.
Dabo Swinney is a really good football coach, and I think I know that he's getting offers from the National Football League to move up. I don't know whether he's going to do it or not. He has definitely turned Clemson into a powerhouse. It's amazing, Em, but since 2014, Ohio State won the national championship, there have been, I think, 11 playoff games, and four of them were won by Clemson, and the other seven were all won by SEC teams, six of those being Alabama and one of those being Georgia. Deja vu all over again, right?
Yeah, it went down pretty much the way people thought. I have to be honest and say that I thought Notre Dame would fight a little harder. I don't think 3 points is very indicative of the kind of team they are, especially offensively. Ian Book is actually a very good quarterback, and it just, they never got it going, and there was no momentum. You could just see it on the field. But I think for Clemson to be, competitive next week in the Bay Area, they're going to need Dexter back. They're going to need these guys back from the suspension. And I actually spoke with some of the Clemson staff, and they are working to expedite his appeal. And they said to me that they firmly believe that he will be back in time for the championship game. I don't know how you get something like that done, probably a lot of dollar signs, but that's what I heard.
Interesting, but not surprising. My opinion, number 5 Georgia is as good as Clemson and would give Alabama maybe still the best game.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that everyone's saying, everyone's thinking, and we wish that we could have seen, a Georgia in this playoff. But at the end of the day, their route did not take them here. And we can't go back and say, oh, what if this had happened? What if that had happened? No doubt that they're a great team, and they're probably the best-suited team to beat Alabama, but that's not what we have. So we're going to take this Clemson team, and who looked very strong. I mean, defensively, their secondary stepped up. People were saying, oh, that's going to be the weakness. But I thought they played extremely well. They got to the quarterback. That was the fastest pass rush the book has ever seen. And they looked solid. So I take that Clemson team last night, and I throw them against Alabama, and I'd like to see what happens.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that we saw in Clemson. We definitely saw defensive depth, something that we weren't as aware of as we were after watching yesterday's Cotton Bowl. That team definitely, it was a different atmosphere. But I've got to ask you, do you think now, and I know Nick Saban is a detractor of this, we've heard him bellyache against it, but is it time to look at expanding the playoffs? I know it's not that old yet, but, here's my thought process. Again, I think both Georgia and Ohio State get in if they expand it. There's almost no doubt about that. And even though UFC is a different team, UCF, excuse me, is a different team without their quarterback, it still allows a lesser, like an underdog, a smaller opponent, giving them a chance at glory, at a David beating Goliath. We saw it Baltimore, Maryland last year, taking down the number one seed in the whole country in Virginia. They said it never would be done. I don't know that it'll be done again in our lifetime, but maybe we should see football get that opportunity. Now, UCF would get destroyed by Alabama as the eighth seed if they had eight. We know that. Matter of fact, they'd have to have the local hospitals staff up. But the point is, at least you would show the country that, hey, we did give David a chance to slew Goliath.
I mean, you're right. It would definitely answer some of these questions, and it would give people a chance to see the what if happen. And that's really what fans at this point want, because at the end of the day, we have teams that were here and were wondering about the teams that got left out. But my problem with expansion is that it's never going to be enough, is that we're always going to be like, well, we need two more teams because what if these guys got in? So I don't know how you ever satiate everybody's appetite in this playoff. And I thought Dabo made a very interesting point in his press conference the other day. He said, regular season is the playoffs for us. We got to play every game like that. And if you expand and you make it bigger, then maybe you lose some of that specialness that surrounds the season.
Emily, Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban say what they say because they're in the playoffs every year. Why would they want it expanded to give themselves more of a chance to lose and to take a chance on like a Tua going down or something again with an ankle sprain? I'm sorry. Those guys are always there, and that's why I say it. You'll find a guy like Jim Harbaugh probably crying on the other end saying we need to expand the playoffs before
well,
I get
Mike
fired.
Leach told me, at one point, Mike Leach told me that he would love to see a 60-14 playoff, so maybe that does play.
Oh, my God. Here we go. I'm just saying, I think four is just not enough because this year, if ever, I think you had two teams left out that could have given us better playoff games than we saw. Granted, Kyler Murray did a tremendous job keeping Oklahoma close enough to make it a game at the end. We saw what a brilliant athlete that dude is. I mean, my God in heaven, he is something special. And I'd love to see this in him. I'll transition into this and talking about Kyler Murray. I mean, what are the chances that we ever see the first ever quarterback play baseball and football?
I think that's a really good question. And after spending a lot of time around him at the Heisman, you kind of got a sense that if in a perfect world he could do both, he would. I mean, he loves both sports so wholeheartedly. But I think yesterday was a perfect example of why baseball is a clear path for him. There's longevity in the game. He can continue to do something he loves without the high risk that football has and still get the high reward once he makes his way through the prospect system. But I do think that if there ever was an athlete, we could end up seeing a football career down the road once he's done with baseball a little bit, because these guys, they don't like to give it up. They miss it. Look at Marshawn Lynch came back because he couldn't stand being away from it. So I think maybe we will see him be a two-sport eventually.
I hope so. He's one guy that I would really like to see play both sports, because as great as athletes as Deion Sanders was, and my goodness, if Bo Jackson doesn't get hurt, I think we'll definitely see a guy that made the Hall of Fame in one sport. And you know, not, you know, obviously I don't think he would have done it in baseball, but you know, that's a shame. But I think Kyler Murray might be the best of them all. I really do. This guy is so incredibly athletically gifted.
He absolutely is. He's a gamer, too. You saw it in his eyes when he was getting knocked around there, and he's got a fire, you know, and I think that's something that we'll miss, you know, now that he's going to be gone. But I can't wait to see it, you know, stepping up and facing a 90-mile-an-hour, you know, curveball or fastball or whatever it is that he faces in the MLB. He told us at the Heisman, he told us that hitting one of those balls 90 miles an hour is the hardest thing in any sport. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, we've always heard that. I mean, hitting a baseball, man, it is definitely a really tough thing. And I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing him a lot of things on the bases. I mean, the guy is so fast. You know, he's going to be a threat on the bases. He's going to be an exciting player. And like you said, he is a gamer. Guy's going to be fun to watch. Let's move ahead, Em. We've got a week from Monday, the national championship game right up in your neck of the woods. You got to be so excited for that game to being played in Northern Cali. But also, so let's be realistic. Like I said, Dabo Sweeney will find a way to keep this game close. I agree with you 100%. I'm all over this guy's bandwagon. But I just don't think in the long run, I think we're going to see Alabama holding up another championship trophy. What will it take for Clemson to beat this Alabama team?
Yeah, that is a good question. I really think that they're going to need, you know, they're going to need to come out winging, and that's something that Oklahoma did not do. And if you're going to play a team like Alabama, who you know is going to score and who's going to limit you from scoring, every possession has to matter from the get-go. And I think Dabo made a good point this week. He said, you know, we play these big games every week because everyone counts. So I think his approach is one that works. And heading into this, as long as they keep their heads right and they don't get distracted by any more drug tests, they should be all right.
And, you know, last thing I'll ask you, you know, obviously the quarterbacks in this national championship game, both a great deal of attention this year. Who would have thought Lawrence would have turned out to be the quarterback he was at Clemson at the beginning of the season when their starting quarterback says, see ya, and you throw this freshman. This guy's playing like a senior. I mean, he is really special. And then on the other side of the ball, Tua came back. I didn't see any evidence of a guy that just had minor ankle surgery not too long ago. Wow, did he play good as well. We got a hell of a quarterback matchup, and that's not even talking about two defenses that could totally get after it.
I know. I really enjoyed, you know, watching Lawrence play, and his composure, because obviously, like, there was a little bit of struggle in that first quarter where we thought, okay, maybe this might be a game. But, you know, he came back and he just throws dimes. I mean, I'm watching these balls just drop perfectly into receivers' hands. And his receivers are athletic, so he doesn't need to do that, but he can. And he's so composed for his age. It's almost inspiring, you know, to someone in their 30s trying to get their life together. Like, this kid has it figured out. He's such a leader for the team. So, you know, Tua is Tua, but I think Lawrence has a chance to do something really special.
Hey, and he's got that Remember the Titans Ronnie Bass look going on. But you know, one more question now. Watching the game at the post-game interview with Dabo Swinney, he didn't seem to want to give Lawrence credit. It almost seemed like there was a little bit of something there, and I could be totally reading into it, but if you watch the postgame, the reporter is trying to get Dabo to talk about Lawrence and his performance and a freshman to do this, and Dabo wanted to talk about the offensive line and the system and the play calling, and I was kind of surprised at that you wouldn't just rant and rave about your freshman quarterback. Last year with Georgia, we sure heard that.
Yeah, and it's funny because you can get Dabo talking about almost anything. Nobody loves anything the way Dabo loves college football. But if the post-game press conference, he did end up gushing about, you know, Lawrence and all of the things he's capable of and having him step in. So he did speak about it. But I think that Clemson is just such a team-based program. That's the culture they're building there, that it always comes first, and it's like automatic for him to talk about everybody else except for, you know, a star player. So I kind of like the mentality, and I think that's why Clemson's so successful.
I can't argue the point at all. Like I said, I said after yesterday's game, it's funny, you're watching it and you're all over the Dabo Swinney bandwagon, and I said I truly believe, I'm like, in 3 years this guy's gonna be coaching in the National Football League. I hope he has success up there. We've seen a lot of guys, a la Nick Saban, go up there and just not have any kind of success, but they're unbelievable at the college level, and Dabo Swinney is, you know, in my opinion, becoming one of the greatest college coaches of all time. I mean, he is dominating college football, him and Nick Saban. It's those two and everybody else, and maybe toss Urban Meyer in there, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they're different, you know, and I like Kirby Smart for other reasons, and I like, you know, I even give them, I like Mike Leach a bit, and I like Lincoln Riley, but they're just all different. There's nobody that's ever going to be like Saban, but I think that Dabo is carving out a very unique corner of this empire, and I think he's doing it the right way. And obviously the drug test stuff was a little bit of a setback, but I think we're going to find out that these kids, you know, they weren't aware of what was going on, and who knows how they got these supplements or whatever. But I think for the most part, the program is above board, and it's great. And I like following it. So.
Well, I can't argue with you. We also saw some unbelievable catches in the game. And one thing we do know, Dabo Swinney can recruit quarterbacks. That's for damn sure. Emily Van Buskirk, Yard Barker, check her out. Awesome stuff. Also co-host of the national podcast Sideline Sass with Kaylee Krish. And you can follow her on Twitter at EmilNem. Em, always appreciated, but one more week. Got to have you on again next Sunday morning, as we've got a week to see what's going to go on at practice and everything else, and what storylines are going to develop, because Dabo Swinney and Nick Saban, you know, pretty soon you're going to have to put them in a UFC ring together.
I know, it's going to be an epic week. All of these events in the Bay, I'm going to be covering them all live on social. I'm going to be doing articles on Yard Barker. You know, check out the one from last night, and there's a really great video of the Eagle. I don't know if you guys heard about it, but the Eagle at the beginning of the game is supposed to fly around the stadium during the anthem, and instead of landing with its trainer, it landed on a Notre Dame fan. And then it landed on another Notre Dame fan. So we thought it was a sign from the gods, but it just turned out to be a
It was a sign Absolutely. For the dogs. It was a sign from the gods. Notre Dame was going to get bird pooped on, and that's what it was all about. So, and they did. 3 points, the lowest output in Notre Dame bowl history. And without Clemson's arguably their best defensive player. So really a cool thing. Em, looking forward to hearing what you have to say next week, and I'll tell you, if you get any good interviews, put them on your phone. I'll have him send them to Magnum, and we'll run them on the show next week.
That sounds good. I'm on it.
All right. Awesome. Emily Van Buskirk, appreciate you. We are going to take a break. Fox Sports Radio, this is Out of Line.
Left wing shot from Muzzin, a stick save, Subban. Knight's clear. Schmidt ahead. Carlson all by himself down the middle. He scores! William Karlsson outweighted quick, tucked it inside the left post. Knights lead 3-1. Strong play by Nate Schmidt. Breakout pass, Stastny right wing, works towards the open net. He scores! Just as the Kings got their goalie off the ice, Stastny got ahead into the zone. Knights take a 4-1 lead.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
At Vegas Golden Knights, 4-4 in their last eight games, but they have won their last two, and they have gotten a point, at least a point, in each of their last five games. Two overtime losses, one to the Canadiens, and the back-to-back games, as a matter of fact, and then the very next night to the Los Angeles Kings. Both of those games happened in a T-Mobile Arena, but then they go on the road, they beat the Avalanche, and then yesterday in L.A., they beat the Kings and avenged that loss, and it was a big game for many reasons. One, you're having guys that you need to see put the puck in the net. You're having guys like William Carrier continue to surprise with an offensive output he hasn't had to this point in his career. And then Malcolm Subban, what a giant game for him. 30 of 31 attempts, and really got a lot of respect from his teammates. But most of you, that if you don't know, that is the first win of the season for Malcolm Subban, as Marc-Andre Fleury has definitely handled most of the workload at all. Steve Karp joins us right now. Steve Karp, of course, been around for a while with the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Started off covering the Knights there. Steve is now a senior editor at Gaming Today, a columnist at Sin Bin Vegas, and author of a book right now that is out on the shelves, Vegas Born. Steve's doing some book signings, and he'll let you know about that as well. The book is The Remarkable Story of the Vegas Golden Knights. Really cool stuff. Steve, how big was that game for Malcolm Subban?
Well, from a confidence standpoint, I think it really gives him a boost, and also I think validates all the hard work he's been putting in with Dave Pryor every day in practice. And so it's really well being a backup goalie in the NHL, especially on a team where a future Hall of Famer is getting the majority of the work. So, you know, mentally you got to be prepared. Physically, you certainly need to play. And I think Malcolm Subban is maturing in front of our eyes. He told me after the game yesterday he's doing a much better job this year in his prep, whether he plays or not. And I just think there's a maturity to the kid that we're starting to see, and I think it reflects in his play on the ice. He played really well when they lost to Columbus. In fact, you could argue that just about he's had for this team, he's played pretty well in net.
No question about it. I think that we're like you said, we've seen the maturing of Subban. Now it's just a matter of, you know, how much playing time he's going to get leading into the playoffs. As I think the Knights look like they're primed to make the playoffs. Yeah, 500 in their last eight games, but it's a team that definitely has talent on it, a lot of experience based on last year. You go to a game today, they play the Kings in L.A., now you head over, you just not too far of a jump to Arizona to play the Coyotes, a team they should pick up 2 points against. Do you go back-to-back with Subban, or do you think Gallant throws Fleury back in the net tonight?
I try to guess, and I'm always wrong. So, I think Subban should play tonight against the Yotes. Then part of me says, you know what? Might be good for Fleury to get in there. And they want to win this game. Arizona plays Vegas tough. And other than, you know, the October 10th home opener a year ago, where the Knights jumped up with four goals in the first 11, 12 minutes, the Coyotes, they're an interesting group. You know, they're toward the bottom of the table, obviously, and you know they're probably not making the playoffs yet again. The future of the franchise is very much up in the air. Yet they, for whatever reason, they play Vegas tough. there's just a few guys who always seem to give the Golden Knights problems. So to answer your question, it wouldn't shock me if Fleury is back in goal, and it wouldn't shock me if Subban returns to the net tonight.
Okay, I like it.
Sorry, I couldn't be more definitive.
No, it's all right, Steve. It is, you know, you would look at it. The reason I, you know, ask it is normally you would think, yeah, he'd put Fleury in. They do want to win this game, and Arizona does seem to get up for playing the Vegas Golden Knights. But in the same respect, Gerard Gallant has been known to ride hot things, and 30 of 31 shots stopped yesterday by Subban. Gallant, the wheels might be turning up there. But also watching the game, another thing, you know, I get asked this question all the time. You know, seeing a lot of Knights games, you know, what player to me, if you know, is the best player on the team? That is, to me, a really tough question to answer. You look at, you know, obviously Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, everything starts and stops with him, but William Karlsson, but one of the guys that I got to say, and we just keep talk about a guy we're watching grow up, Steve, how about the play of Alex Tuch, man, and how good is this guy to be so young and already playing on a first line on one of the more, you know, the more prevalent teams in the National Hockey League right now?
Well, you know, he was a first-round draft pick. So somebody in Minnesota thought he could play a little bit. And he was very good at Boston College in his short college career there. I just think his game is really well-suited for today's NHL. He is a power forward who can really skate. He's got great size. He's got really good hands. I mentioned on Twitter yesterday, when he hit the crossbar, I think it was in the second period, or yeah. Was it the first period? I think it was the second period. And it kind of got on top of Jonathan Quick really fast. It's a heavy shot that has a lot of pace to it. And I guess what I mean by that is if you're the goaltender and you're expecting the puck to come at you at a certain rate of speed so you can track it, his shot is so much strength and torque behind it. It really moves quickly, and when it hits you as a goaltender, it's like a thud. It's like getting hit with a bullet. And he's got that kind of quick release, and of course, though he scored yesterday, he got one to go. This one went under the crossbar, the one he scored. But yeah, I mean, look, he's proving that he can play with anybody on any line. No, they have him back on the second line as Gallant went back with Riley Smith to the top line with Carlson and Marchessault. And it's fine. You know, Tuck is very adaptable. And he's playing with a guy, Paul Stastny, right now, who's really starting to find the rhythm on the ice with his teammates. And it doesn't matter who you put him out there with. You know, he was hoping to be playing with Pat Turin, you know, throughout the whole thing. But obviously, he got hurt. Pat Surrey's been hurt a couple times. I think they've only played once or twice together all year. So, Stastny is obviously having a positive impact on the way Kemp is performing. And it doesn't matter who else is on the line. Right now it's Brandon Peary, who's done a great job since the recall from Chicago. But I think it's also who you play with that maybe determines how well you play.
Well said, Steve. You know, you brought up a guy that I want to close talking about, Brandon Peary. This is a guy, you know, I'm not shocked he's scoring goals. That's something he does. The issue with Brandon Peary is his ability to play both ends of the ice, to be a two-way player. And what is his role going to be going forward? Because you always want a guy that has a knack for putting the biscuit in the basket, but in the same respect, you can't have a guy that's going to give up odd man rushes because he doesn't play two ways.
Well, if you've been watching him since he got recalled from Chicago, he's done a really good job of being responsible at his own end of the ice. He's not just strictly a scorer. He has done a good job of getting back, supporting the D, helping out, making plays at his own end. And I think you saw that in Chicago. Rocky Thompson had mentioned that a few weeks ago. He was asked and whether or not he had improved defensively. Rocky had said they had worked a lot with him on getting back and helping out the D. And you're seeing that with Peary. He's not lagging behind when the other team gets the puck. He's working hard to get back. And Gallant recognizes it, and that's why he's going to stay out there for the foreseeable future.
Well, what happens when Pacioretty comes back? Everyone's healthy. Stastny's back now. And what happens when this team, if this team, gets completely healthy? Is there a spot for Brandon Perry on this team?
Well, a lot will depend on whether or not Brandon Perry can still do what he was brought up to do, which is score. And if he goes through a prolonged slump, he's going back to Chicago. If he can keep a hot hand or relatively hot hand, they'll find a spot for him. You know, if it means sitting Carpenter or Lindbergh, Nosek. I mean, you've seen what Gallant's been doing the last couple weeks. He's been kind of rotating guys out, giving guys a day off. He had Reed sit out. He had Nosek sit out. He's had Oscar sit out. He's had Carpenter. You know, so he'll find a way to get a guy who's played well to keep in the lineup.
He is Steve Karp. You can follow him at SteveKarp56. Again, Steve, senior editor at Gaming Today, columnist at Sinbin Vegas, and author of Vegas Born. Steve, before I let you go, talk about the book, man. Give us some promotion. I know people can get it at Barnes & Noble and other places. It's out there right now. Where can they see you and maybe get your autograph on the book?
Okay. We're going to have two book signings in January, one on the 12th at the Barnes & Noble in Summerlin, which is located on Charleston and Fort Apache, and that'll be from noon to 3 p.m. And the second book site will be at the Arsenal City National Arena on January 19th, the day the Knights host the Penguins. It'll be from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., so if you're coming out to the morning skate, you can pick up a copy of the book. I'll be there to sign it and meet all the fans and stuff. I know it's after Christmas, but hopefully people still buy books after Christmas. And it's been well received by the public. It's got good reviews. The sales have been good. All I wanted to do was write a really good book about the first season of the Golden Knights, and I think I was able to succeed in that endeavor. So hopefully we'll get a good turnout. And if you've already bought the book, by the way, and you'd like me to sign it, just bring it to the either signing, and I'll be glad to sign it.
That's fantastic. Steve Karp, again, appreciate you joining the show. Definitely looking forward to getting that book. And Steve, I know that it impacted my life tremendously. And, you know, I wasn't at every single game like you were. I went to every playoff game. But I tell people, you know, I didn't even waste my time putting something like this on my sports bucket list, because it is such an anomaly in terms of things that just shouldn't happen, something that did. And we saw it here. How much did this change and impact your life? You've covered a lot of events, my friend. Where does this rank?
Well, having grown up, you know, playing hockey and being a New York Rangers season ticket holder, later an Islanders fan, still am, to get to cover an NHL team was kind of a dream come true for me. And remember, I've covered, you know, UNLV's national championship basketball team.
Yep.
and a zillion championship fights over the years. And many other things, World Cup, but it was an amazing story. It was an amazing run by an amazing team, and that's why the title of the book is, you know, the remarkable story of the Golden Knights, because it truly is a remarkable story. No one in the right mind thought this team could do what it did, and they're playing well again this year. I mean, don't discount the idea of them making another run to the finals. It's like you said, they get Eric Howell back at some point, and they can keep everyone healthy, especially Pacioretty, who's a real, you know, veteran player who knows how to win. Hey, and Fleury gets hot, why can't they make him run? It wouldn't shock me. We have to write a sequel.
No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, the key is, again, it all starts and stops with the last line of defense, was with Marc-Andre Fleury. The key is goaltenders make all the difference in the postseason in the National Hockey League. We've seen it time and time again. You can get an 8 seed like in L.A. with a Jonathan Quick that's on fire, go all the way and win the Stanley Cup Finals. And if Fleury plays like he did last year, and like we've seen him play in the majority of the outings that he's played in this year, the sky's the limit. I agree. He is Steve Karp. Appreciate you, my friend. Thanks for joining the show.
Anytime, Brian. Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
As you as well. That's Steve Karp. Listen, we're going to take our final break here. We'll come back, talk a little bit UNLV basketball, and, of course, week 17, the final week of the regular season in the National Football League. This is Out of Line.
This is- why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why. This is why. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why.
Blazing. Brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 and North and North Durango, Montecito Crossing Plaza. A Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital, and two happy hours every day. America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports, and they do a hell of a job up there. It's a great time, and during football season, although Monday night, the last Monday night game was last week, we are up there every Monday night, enjoying ourselves, giving away a lot of stuff, and having a good time. And I don't know, I got to find out. I might be up there next Monday night for the national championship game. Since it is on a Monday night, we'll see. I'll find that out. I know we will be there for Super Bowl Sunday doing the show live. So put that on your calendars. Come on out. I got so many things to give away. It's going to be a great early morning to start the Super Bowl Sunday with you and go out to breakfast after that and then head back to Buffalo Wild Wings and watch the game. They'll have a lot going on. It is pretty cool. But, you know, what's blazing is in 2018, Mags, talking about what's blazing and reflecting back on the year, it really was a blazing year for sports if you were in the Las Vegas area. And it all, you know, starts off with the Vegas Golden Knights and what they did last year. Brother, I know for a fact that it has impacted the hell out of your life. I don't remember seeing you on TV before the Vegas Knights got into town, and now you're a television star.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it certainly was career-wise a maybe the best year. Well, there's no doubt about it. It was the best year of my life. I mean, I was at all five games of the Stanley Cup Finals, which is not something I ever would have imagined. I had only been, I'm trying to think, I had been to a national championship game in college football, and that was way back when, and I bought a ticket for that when I went to go see Tennessee and Florida State in the Fiesta Bowl, I guess about 1997, 98, something like that. It was a long time ago. But yeah, for me, it was pretty incredible. And, you know, as the year comes to an end, I can reflect back and say that I've grown a lot professionally. Certainly I've made some really good contacts, with the Golden Knights. I've become, pretty close with some of the guys on the team. And, you know, it's for me, I didn't get into the business to become friends with guys on the team, but I think anyone who's in the business and who does what I do, sometimes you build relationships, and it's hard to not become, you know, friendly with the guys that you work with on a every single day. You know, for me, it's a little bit different. I'm not a columnist. I'm not a newspaper writer, so I don't have to really have that separation that those guys do. Because look, we are the flagship station. We are partners with the Golden Knights. So for me, it's a little bit different. I mean, I'm objective. You have to be, but you know, the year has been just incredible. And you know, and certainly it begins and ends for me with the Golden Knights, and it was something that I never thought growing up watching the New Jersey Devils. It was not something I ever imagined I would ever do, and being that would be in the locker room for my favorite team when I was a kid, and that was something I accomplished last year. I was in the locker room for the Devils after they came here, and I'll probably be in there again this year on January 6th when they come to town. But you know, that was for me, that was a career defining moment. And, you know, being in the locker room for the Golden Knights when they lost the Stanley Cup, it was hard to not be emotional because of the ride that those guys were on and the what they did for this city. And, you know, anyone who discounts that is well, quite clearly they don't know what they're doing. But it's you know, the way I've been in sports cities before. I grew up outside New York. I lived in Phoenix when the Coyotes were really good, when the Suns were actually pretty good. And I've never seen a city embrace a team or rally around a team the way I saw this city rally around the Vegas Golden Knights. And for me, it's not something I'll never forget that. I mean, I've done a lot of pretty amazing things in my life, but that's the one thing that I think I will never, ever, ever remember as long as I live. And I've got those memories written down. I've got audio of it in case I ever get Alzheimer's, heaven forbid. I'll have those memories saved. And it's the kind of thing where I hope 2019 is just as good as 2018 was.
Yeah, 2019, it's going to be tough to beat it. Chris, I say no question about it. It's one of my favorite years in sports and in everything I've ever done, and even including the opportunity I had to sit with Muhammad Ali and interview the guy. Nothing beat what I experienced this past year. And real quickly, I'll tell you a couple of things that meant a great deal to me, Chris, and you were part of some of them. The red carpet, the NHL Awards banquet, and us standing there talking to William Karlsson, and then P.K. Subban walks by and he's got his bling on and asks, what what he looks like. I mean, I'll never forget that moment. To me, it was extra special. Some of the other things that are going on that, you know, I want to mention, two new stadiums are being constructed in 2018, and we're seeing that right now, which is really cool. Of course, the Aviators, who will have Kyler Murray. We might very well see him play in Vegas before the end of the year. That's super cool. But the one story, and I'm going to share it quick, and we'll I want to get to, you know, a lot more, but, you know, in the Stanley Cup Finals, I went to City National Arena, and, you know, you were there all the time, and I went, you know, for some practices during the playoffs, and I went game one of the Stanley Cup Finals. I happened to go to the practice down at City National Arena, and there's a ton of media, way more than normal, and everyone's swamped, as they always are in the locker room, as you know, for the practices. And I see Marc-Andre Fleury, and he's standing by himself. There's no media members or anything, so I thought, oh, wow, what a great opportunity. And I walk over to him. Marc-Andre says, I'm not allowed to do interviews during the practice. That's why there's nobody bugging me right now. Or he didn't say bugging me, but something along those lines. And he said, but hey, I'll get you tonight. And I go, yeah, after you guys win. And he put a smile on his face, and that was about it. I go to the game that night, and I know I've told you this story, and it's one of my my favorite stories of the year. I go to the game that night after the game. You know, that's the only one that the Golden Knights won in the Stanley Cup Finals was game one. And I'm down there in the locker room. Everyone is swamped that's down there. Every player's got, there was so much media. It was incredible. I mean, they had a whole new section they had to create for the media to accommodate all the people that were here.
Yeah.
And I look over and I see Fleury with a melee, you know, guy's got a ton of people, and he kind of leans his head, turns his head to the side, he sees me. Now, granted, I was still wearing the same thing I wore that day, but he beckons me over and says, I owe you an interview, and you said we'd win. And he doesn't realize how much that impacted me, that a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury, who just got done playing goal in a Stanley Cup final game in one of the most incredible stories ever, and he remembered he owed me an interview, which he didn't owe me crap, but I will never forget that, brother. It impacted my life, and it's one of my favorite stories to tell people.
Yeah, he was injured for the first part of last season. So the media really didn't get a whole lot of opportunity, because remember, he was injured in that Detroit game, which I think was like game 7 or 8 of the season. Then he missed 25 games,
game
which
four.
Is...
Game 4 of the season.
Was it game 4 of the season?
They were 3-0 when they played Detroit. That was their first loss.
And then he was out basically until the middle of December. So for that first part of the season, we didn't really get to know Marc-Andre Fleury. I've gotten to know the guy a little bit, and he is one of the most amazing athletes I've ever met in my life. First of all, he's a...
Humility, Chris.
Well, he's just an amazing athlete, because if you ever watch what he does, you know, he does splits, he does all sorts of
acrobatics. Oh, he could have been a gymnast, man.
But he's on ice skates when he does it. Most people, like, I would say a pretty big portion of our audience, you put them on ice skates, most of them can't even stand.
And to wear that gear is so heavy to be a goaltender. No, no question about it. Absolutely love the guy. A magical year, and I'm blessed. And 2018 was blazing if you were in Vegas and involved in sports in any way, shape, or form, and especially if you got to the privilege of spending some time with the Vegas Golden Knights, which we did, and it was awesome. Listen, Chris, short on time, but UNLV, last week, after they had come off a win, you know, it was back on the 15th of December against BYU in the overtime game where they nearly blew a 17-point lead to Brigham Young, that one at T-Mobile Arena. Then they go to Hawaii to play in the Classic. They're really impressive in game one, 73-59 win over the Rainbows. And you thought, wow, the Rainbow Warriors get beat. They're going to play Indiana State. They're favored by 2.5 points. I said blatantly, I think they're going to lose to Indiana State. You looked at me like I had a pencil stuck in my ear when I said that. And I said, I could see him losing the game after that, too. This is a team that Marvin Menzies is on the hot seat. I got some grief about that from you last week.
I was wrong, you know, and I thought maybe they had turned the page. But that being said, I'm still going to stand by my claim that we need to be patient. This is a very young team. There's going to be ups and downs. I think, you know,
Chris,
if we react and overreact to every win and loss.
I agree. I'm not going to disagree.
You know, let's see where they are at the end of the season and have this discussion. Look, if they lose every game, look, they're not going to lose every game in the Mountain West Conference. But look, if they go
12-win season,
if they go 5-13 and they lose in that play-in game, I think there's a discussion. That being said, I don't think we can overreact to every single win and loss. Look, the Bucknell loss was bad. It was real bad. But traditionally, at least the last decade, Bucknell's been a really good program. That being said, you don't lose by 25 points to those guys on a neutral floor.
Unbelievable.
In the third place game.
Unbelievable. And I want to say the thing with me watching that game, Chris, and why I had an issue with it, why I wanted to rehash that again, was they looked out of sorts. It looks like Menzies does not have this basketball team. And that's why I say you can be as patient as you want with this guy. It doesn't look like these guys, they're getting worse, not better.
Well, and to me, the telltale sign is when he makes a comment like, we don't have that guy. Well, that's on you, man.
100%. Who brings the guys in?
Yeah.
You do. It's UNLV. You're supposed to be a great recruiter. Recruit. And we're going to leave that there.
I will say, I'm going to stand by him. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I just think, let's see where they are at the end of the season.
Okay, well, I'll be there with you, and I'll say that.
And you know what? But if they go 5-13 in the conference, you can give me all the grief you want.
No, I'm not. Here's what's funny is I literally said on a different show that I do on another station on Friday night, I said they're going to beat Colorado State at the Thomas and Mack on Wednesday night, which I think is a very beatable team, especially at the Thomas and Mack in front of the 4,000 people that'll be there. Okay, so listen, let's move on, Chris. Week 17, final regular season week. You were on a roll, 3 wins in a row. You took first place by yourself, first guy to double digits, 10-5-1. We do go all the way through the Super Bowl. Good call on Atlanta last week. A lot of playoff implication games. The most game I'm looking forward to tonight, tonight's a playoff game. Sunday Night Football, the Tennessee Titans without Marcus Mariota, Blaine Gabbert. I just don't know how this guy's going to beat the Indianapolis Colts. I think they're a shoe-in for this. I think, matter of fact, that's a great bet. I think the money line on the Colts, even though you're going to have to give up some, you might have to spend 120 to win 50, I'd bet a ton of money on that. They're going to win this game. But who do you like tonight, man? Who's your guy?
I was leaning to the Saints, but they have announced that Drew Brees is not going to play, which is a shame because he's 8 yards shy of hitting 4,000 yards for the 13th time in his career. He's not going to play tonight. I'm going to stick with the Falcons on the road against Tampa. No DeSean Jackson. He's created a mess there in Tampa. I'm not sold on Jameis Winston. I think Dirk Cotter's on his way out. I think for Atlanta, they want to end the season on a positive note, a disappointing season for those guys. I'm going to stay with the Falcons.
All right, we'll give you the Falcons. You got them, and that is what are they laying today?
I think it's 1.5.
I'm looking for it right now. I'll see if I can find it. But here's what I like. I'm going to tell you straight up. Ravens, 5.5 points. It's funny. A lot of people like the Browns. The Sharps like the Browns getting the points in Baltimore. It's a playoff game for the Ravens. I think they win. Their defense is unbelievable. And I think they give Baker Mayfield fits today. I'm going to take them and give up the 5.5 points. It's in Baltimore.
Must-win game for those guys.
It is. And we'll have Caleb Herring's pick. I'll have that for you next week, and we'll find out what he does. This is Out of Line. I want to thank Emily Van Buskirk, Yard Barker, and I want to thank Steve Karp. Thanks, Chris Magnum Chapman. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Have a very happy, safe, healthy, and blessed New Year. We'll see you next year.